Yes, people, it is part two of this week's Echo Chamber. And hey, I'm always going to bring you some hot shit. And this one, no except we're keeping things popping because I've got a brand new indie flick, right? It is a noir and it is fantastic. And then we get to speak to the woman who is behind it, and she has kicked some ass. So people, let's get it going. So let us get it rocking, right? We have this new indie flick. It's a thriller noir. It's a steamy film about obsession, infidelity, love, romance, family, all of those things. And it's gonna have you gripped. So without further ado, people, let's take a look at Demise. Well, holy moly, yo, people, when I tell you Demise is, gosh, it's a film you need to check out. You need to check it out. Man, my girl Amy hooked me up real good with this one, okay? So, you're thinking, what's the gist, right? What's the gist with the flick? So, it's this, right? It is written and directed by Yaya Estrada Lowe. You know, the film is produced by Annabelle D. Monroe, Nicole Metcalf, and Yaya Estrada Lowe. It's executive produced by Ehrman Badi, John Eschelberg, Stephen Lowe, and Jeff Olin. It is co-produced by Ace Underhill, Ezekiel Martinez Jr., and Jason Dax. It's associate produced by Marvin Glover. Jeff Clayton handles the music. Justin Aguiar and Alex Van Patten took care of cinematography. Dewan Karsten is on production design. Tanuna Carson is art direction. Victoria Vasenko was costume design, hair and makeup. We have Nadine Penner and Denise Valavazo, right? And this cast. Well, Celine is played by Liz Fennin. Caleb is played by Carlo Mendez. We then have Fiona and Fabiola, played by Crystal Hernandez. Which, I mean, that explains a lot, right? Fiona's best friend, Miguel, is played by Morris Jude. We have got Pamela Ives, played by Marlene Facey. There is Lydia, played by Catelyn Rose Williams. Elena, played by Lucy Serrano. Baby Brody is played by Noah Solo Schaefer. Brody at one is played by Levi John Johnson. Brody at six is played by Sterling Monroe. All right, we have got, who else do we have that we should mention? Martin is played by Bill Nierhoff. Nurse Sally is played by Chinay Moore. Dr. Smith, Dr. Simon Smith is played by Richard Rivera. We got Celine's boyfriend played by Octavio Taddy. Our nurses, the male nurse is played by Cedric Jonathan. There's nurse, who else is there? So there's another nurse is played by Anastasia Lincoln. We got the other doctors in the house, right? One's played by Mark Shafir, and another doctor is played by Stephen Lowe. Right, I think that's probably our main group of people. So the gist of the film is set in present day. Latino landscaper Caleb Castillo leads a double life. Entangled in a steamy affair with rising fashion star Fiona Hernandez, while simultaneously devoted to his beautiful wife, Celine. Celine wants a child with Caleb more than anything in the world, as Fiona's patience wears thin with Caleb's promises to leave his wife. Celine discovers Caleb's infidelity. They break up. Caleb and Fiona begin to forge a new life together, but Celine becomes obsessed with reclaiming what she believes is rightfully hers, including Caleb's newborn son, Brody. It appears that she may just succeed, but just when Celine thinks she has achieved victory, the film takes yet another twist and turn on this roller coaster ride of a modern day noir set in LA. Oh my gosh, people, there are so many turns in this film. Like, oh, you might think, right? I had an idea of where this might go, but it did take a completely, it went in a slightly different direction that I was not expecting. And that's great, right? That's always great. Now, people, this, right, is the feature directorial debut from Estrada Lowe. You know what I mean? And there is so much polish here, right? So much polish you would never have guessed, right? There's a big part of a lot of the articles that have been like written about this film, which is soon to drop, is about like the Latino takeover. You know what I mean? Like a Latino woman behind the camera doing her thing, which that's fantastic. But the story isn't that. Right, the story is that this, you know what I mean, young woman has just come and really kicked ass, right? And I think it's just that perfect example, right? It's that perfect example of giving people opportunities, right? Letting new voices shine. Because we have seen it over and over again, right? We've seen it over and over again. That when talented individuals get their shot, oh, they can shine, right? They can just kill it. And that is what we see here. You know what I mean? That's what we see here. She is a puppet at telling a story, right? The way this is crafted is crazy, right? It's a steamy noir. And we get this kind of imagery as the credits at the beginning, the title credits are rolling. And then we are in the midst of Caleb and Fiona getting it on, right? So we see that and you understand quickly that, oh, okay, this is not the wife, right? And then we see him with Celine. So, you know, straight away, we understand who Caleb is. You know what I mean? And it's just seeing these different dynamics, right? See these different dynamics. Now, what I think is really interesting is that although, you know what I mean? You can look at this and be like, yo, this is a crazy fucking storyline, right? Though, listen, when you know people that have had affairs and done some grimy things, right? And we've seen it in the news and you know what I mean? So it's not just like people you may know, but we've just seen it over and over again. People can do some real crazy things and it can send people into a complete spiral. So a lot of this film, you go, yeah, straight, right? Straight. I see that happening. I can see how someone gets to that. But also, the friends, right? There's conversations with the friends where you'd be like, okay, that's cool. Now, Fiona has a conversation with Miguel, and you're just like, boom. I love that shit because we don't always see that, right? We don't always see the friend being like, yo, come on now. What did you expect here? You know, so all of that is great. And although we are following things in the, you know, in the present, we get some really well-placed flashbacks so we can see how certain things started and certain situations, you know what I mean, got going, which I thought that was handled very well. You know, like there's something big that goes down. I think it's like just before the hour mark and you're watching and you're thinking, yo, okay, where does this go now? Right. And there's things that you think, okay, I'm not quite sure where it's going to go, right, from this point. And then other shit goes down, right? Other shit goes down and you're just like, whoa, okay. What do we do now? Where do we go from here? You know, it's fantastic. I was so gripped with this film. I really enjoyed it. Now, like back, I just remember back in the day, right? There was this sitcom, Sunset Beach, which was insane. It got crazy. The dog was talking to the baby and just all of this stuff. Now, it's not insane. It's not as crazy as that. But the you know what I mean, just the whole Fiona, Fabella, right? Just those kind of things, right? Just the hospital, the block party, just all of these things, just like go, oh, and so you're just gripped because it's so intriguing, it's fascinating. You want to know who's getting their comeuppance, how's this all gonna play out, right? What will be the choice Caleb has to make, right? How does he make this choice? Like, whoa, whoa. And I don't think you're going to be disappointed, people. I do not think you're going to be disappointed. You know what I mean? This film, and again, for this first film, there are so many different locations, right? We got hospitals, we got block parties, we got fashion shoots, right? There's indoor scenes, outdoor, it's like different lighting in the dark. So many different things that are going down. but just handled with, you know, a sublime subtlety where as a viewer, right, you're not thinking, wait, this doesn't make any sense, or that's weird, we're jumping from that to this. No, transitions were great, the shots were great, you know what I mean? Like, and the acting, right? The acting was on point. There's a few characters where, you know what I mean, you're seeing these different sides and they do a superb job, right? You definitely have to really give mad props. Whew! So many props to Christo Hernandez, because the way she plays these two people, but in different ways, like they both have distinct personalities, which, you know what I mean? That's not easy to do. That is not easy to do. You know, so that, yeah. Now, like, listen, there's been a lot of films, you know what I mean, that deal with cheating and infidelity and all of that. So if you like those films, you know, I think there was the Obsession one. Oh man, there's been a few, right? I believe I saw we covered some this year. Man, like, you know what I mean? When you're trying to think of things, oh, my mind's gone blank. But yeah, there's been some great ones, right? I mean, you've got the classics, you know, like Basic Instinct and Sliver and just all of them things. But yeah, there's been other ones that are just, man, handled really well. And this, boy, this will be on your list, right? If you like those films, you will most definitely like Demise, because it is gripping. It is gripping. So, as I said, right, it's great to see representation, you know, behind the camera, in front of the camera. That's great. But the big thing, because you can have representation, but then the story isn't there, right? The acting isn't on point. But when it all comes together so well, right? So well, that's the shine. That's the shine. And that's what happens here, right? Because we've got definitely a fresh new talent. A fresh new talent doing her thing. And that's what it is, right? That's what it is. It is the perfect, right? It's the perfect showcase for breaking down these barriers. Breaking down these barriers, because there is some straight up talent waiting to do their thing. So, yeah, Demise, people, the 27th of February. And word is, there is a sequel ready to go. I say ready to go, script's written, right? Now, you know what I mean? I think any financiers that watch this would be like, okay, take my money, because we want to know what the fuck happens next. Now, we do get a don't get me wrong, we get a definitive ending, but there are threads. There are threads, people, ready to get pulled on. I mean, and I want to see those fucking things get pulled, because this was fantastic. So mark down the 27th of February, because that's when you will be able to grab Demise on a VOD near you. So go do that, people. Go do that. So now we get to speak to the writer, producer, and director, Yaya Estrada Low. Now, at the bottom of her bio, it says Yaya Estrada Low is the new kid in town. And people, She definitely is. So you don't want to miss this one, because trust me, some mad knowledge is gonna get dropped. So let's give it up for Yaya Estrada Low. Okay, people, so I'm delighted to be joined by Yaya Estrada Low.
Thank you so much for having me, Kevin.
Oh, fantastic. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
It's Yara.
Yara. Okay.
But I thought it was cute because all the little kids, you know, my family can't quite say my name, so they say Yaya. So I'm totally familiar with Yaya as well.
Oh, man. Is that... I just struggle with pronunciations. But yo, so you've got your new film, or should I say your feature directorial debut film, dropping real soon, Demise. Yes. How does that feel?
It's an outer body experience when you feel like you've reached the top of the mountain, that's for sure.
You know, it's crazy. I watched the film today because I like to, you know, watch it just before a conversation, so everything's fresh in the mind and all
Yes.
of that.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
But something that really just jumps out with watching this film is you'd never know it's your feature directorial debut.
Oh,
it's so polished. It's so like, it's so engrossing, and it works so well. Like the transitions, the angles, everything is just really good.
I appreciate that so much. I definitely agonized over every moment of this film, and you know, I was really blessed to have an excellent editor, Lawrence Jordan. And so, you know, piecing all of this together took us about 9 months. So, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, you've directed, you know, some TV, a couple of TV things, and you had a short film, right? But that was in 2016.
Right.
So, what, firstly, about that, right? So what was the thing that made you go, I think a feature is next? And then what was the journey from Epic Love, the short, to Demise?
Yeah, so I pretty much learned the basics of directing when I was part of the production team of this internet soap opera. And for Epic Love, we shot the trailer, which is also considered as a short. And, you know, it was always my goal to produce a feature film that I wrote. And so after all the experience that I had working on different sets, I really felt like for Demise that in order for this to be executed the way I see it in my head, then I would have to go in and bite the bullet and direct it myself. And so I kind of just rolled my dice on myself in that moment. So, but yeah, I'm really proud of the film, and I'm really proud of all the team that worked on this movie. And so, yeah.
Okay. Now, was there filmmakers and, you know, like writers and people that you aspired to, like looked up to, that you'd be like, oh, I'd like to do something similar to that, or that works really well. Yeah, I think that would work in Demise. Like what references did you have?
Yeah, so when I was in pre-production with my cinematographer, Justin Aguri, I had him watch all of my favorite 90s romantic thrillers to sort of get a gist of what I was going for in the sense of genre and just an overall you know, I guess that 90s feel, you know, 80s and 90s feel. And I've always been a fan of the great movies like Sleeping with the Enemy, Basic Instinct, Hand That Rocks the Cradle. So that these movies definitely inspired me to watch Demise. I was watching these movies way back when they came out, and I was just always, you know, I've always really enjoyed watching these films. And so, yeah, that was definitely the inspiration.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. You can see kind of nods to those, like a single white female, you know, yeah. Those kind yeah. of things. But it's got its own style to it as well.
Yeah, we've worked really hard to establish the style and look of the film was really important to me, and the aesthetics of it all. And so definitely didn't happen by chance. It was a lot of prep and discussions of the overall look that we accomplished.
So you have the idea. I mean, actually, yeah, where did the idea for the story come from?
Crazy enough, it's pure fiction, and it came straight from my crazy imagination.
I mean, that's good. Because when you first started saying, you're like, crazy enough, I was like, don't say that happened to you. Like, that'd just be crazy. Not like, yo.
I know, I was thinking that early on. I'm like, people are going to think, like, this is, like, me in some way, or, you know, like, I wanted to have, like, children. No, that's not the case at all. I've never wanted kids, so it's definitely not me.
Okay, that's good, because there's some craziness right there, and you'd be like, yes. No. what was the process in writing? Did it take a long time? How many drafts did we go through?
Yeah, so it took me 3 months to write my first draft of Demise, and you know, it just all came flooding in, and I couldn't type fast enough, and so I would write, you know, overall chunks of different things that I was thinking of, and then I wrote for 3 months straight, and then after that, I had a couple of, more than a couple, I would polish it, you know, in the months after that, but it's definitely the fastest screenplay I've ever written. So yeah, it just kind of all came together.
Right. Interesting. Now, because there's always something that I've contemplated, like when I've written certain things that mm-hmm. When I was like writing some comedy, and so it's just like, oh, I didn't see that in a special, did I? Or that's no one else's. So when you're writing this, was there any thought that, wait, there wasn't a scene like that in, The Hand That Rocked the Cradle? Or
right.
There was nothing like that in like, was that going through your mind a lot of the times?
Yeah, I feel like when I finished writing it, you know, I had to kind of make sure, because you are heavily influenced by other things that you watch. Mm. And so, I just had to kind of make sure that I wasn't reimagining something that was already out there. So thankfully, that wasn't the case.
Yeah. I'm watching the film, and I think there's a point where you think, okay, I think I know where it's going. And then then some other stuff happens. You're like, all right, okay, I didn't see that. I did not see that at all.
That makes me very happy, because that was definitely my intention. I didn't want to be predictable. And I think that it's more fun when you are unpredictable, as far as writing and executing a film. And so that makes me very happy to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you threw some curveballs at me with this. And it was great. I loved the fact it went in some different places, you know.
Right on.
Yeah. It there was a vibe, like it's completely different, but it just had this reminded me a little bit of a show back in the early 2000s, Sunset Beach.
Never seen it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was this, I don't think it went on for too long. It was like this kind of weird sitcom soap opera type of thing. And there was just this kind of like people coming back from like the dead and twins and all of this kind of craziness. That it was just like, it got real bonkers towards the end. Like a dog was talking to a baby and just all of this kind of stuff. It was real bonkers, but it was kind of a fun distraction on a Saturday after getting home from work.
Right on. And you know, that's one of the things that scared me the most is the twin factor in the film, because there's a very fine line and it has to be executed very well, because it can either be really cheesy or you can pull it off. So we kind of took another risk doing that. But
I thought that was really just Crystal Hernandez did such a great job, because both had different personalities, right? You didn't think, oh wait, that's, you know, you didn't think that. You just like, oh, and I was like, oh shit, did they get real twins to do this? Because I honestly thought it must be someone else, right?
Oh my gosh. Right on. I mean, yes, she did an incredible job, and every actor knows that it's insanely hard to pull off acting twin characters. She was great.
Yeah, like how easy was the casting situation with this? And when you were writing, did you have particular people or looks in mind, or did this purely come from seeing those auditions and go, oh no, you're definitely this person?
It was a little bit of both. I definitely had some physical descriptions in the script of what this character looked like. And then we were fortunate enough to work with a great casting company called Stella Nova Casting, and our two casting directors, Nicole Dion and Robin Delano, helped us find our three leads, as well as the character Miguel, played by Morris Jude. They helped us with the whole, you know, audition process and everything. And so we found our talent through them.
Right. Yeah, no, the cast in this was fantastic. And we had really good chemistry between these different groups. You know, like, you definitely believed that Miguel and Fiona were great friends, right? And you bought the different relationships, right? Celine and Caleb, and then Fiona and Caleb. They were very different.
Right. You
know, which is interesting.
Yeah. And obviously chemistry in a movie like this is extremely important. And so I was happy that not only did all of them hit it off and have great chemistry, but off screen, we were like one big happy family by the time we finished the film. And just a lot of great people on this set with a great energy and lovely to work with.
Right. Like, was there anything that you did to help with those dynamics? You know, like, were there like meals or, you know, other things? You give people reference points and...
Yeah. So I know definitely Crystal Hernandez and Morris Jude had spent some time together, like grabbing coffee and just getting to know each other a little bit more before we shot the film. And I was super happy about that. Besides that, we did have one table read where all the actors got to meet each other and we all sat down and went through the script and read it together. And besides that, I had a rehearsal with the three lead actors before we shot anything. And we sort of got to work with all the more challenging scenes that day and sort of hammer some details out.
Right. Like, with the whole casting and everything like that, in your mind going into it, what was the thing that you were most worried about? And then bringing it all together, actually on set and everything, Like,
yes.
Well,
I was really worried because I was thinking for the character Celine that, you know, I needed this dynamic actress, like, you know, A-list level of talent, if you know what I mean, to pull this film off, because if I wasn't able to get her for X amount of reasons, you know, indie films have a lot of different challenges that, you know, we have to overcome. And so I felt that the story itself would just fall flat if I didn't find the right actress to play Celine, because there's so much depth to her, and it takes a talented actress to really bring out those different levels that Celine has. And so when Liz Fenning auditioned and we did the callbacks, I felt really happy about selecting her to be the lead character to play Celine, and then as well as Caleb and you know, Carlo Mendez, who played Caleb, and Crystal Hernandez. So I think it also, instincts plays a thing. And then when you're casting, you're always trying to find, yes, talent, but someone that represents the essence of that character is really important in the casting process.
Yeah. No, I think it's really interesting, the Celine character, because you're with her up to a point.
Yes.
Right? And mm-hmm. even when things start to get crazy, you can understand. I mean, once we get to the hospital stuff, then you're just like, okay, now yeah. you've lost me, kid. But up to that, you know, the TPing the house, and just, although I'm just like, how did you get that picture there? But you right. can understand why that might happen. You right. know, it's like when you love someone mm-hmm. and they do something heinous, like mm-hmm. that can mess you up. That can really, you know, destroy your self-worth and belief, and just, you know, you're on this roller coaster. So I think you buy into all of that and how she's kind of shifted. So that was great. And it wasn't crazy, right? It wasn't like, nah, no one's gonna do that. Like, who's mm-hmm. gonna start following someone, and who's gonna, you know, be like, yeah, no, that makes sense. And right. so she really has that balance, right? She really walked that line so well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And
we see it in with everyone, right? Because Crystal, again, you know, when she goes to the restaurant at the beginning, yes. right, you'd be like, yeah, of course someone's going to be frustrated if they've been told this thing over and over right. again, right? Mm-hmm. You're going to be like, wait, what's the deal here? You turn up late, you know, you come at night, we just sleep together, we're not going out, we're not doing right. you know, so you think, yeah, that obviously people are going to do that. So it was just, you buy all of these scenarios and situations, and the mm-hmm. actors just gave us those emotional beats right. just superbly.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm so proud of all of them.
Yeah. No, it was, yeah, it was really good. But when you were thinking about, you know, the structure of the film, was that start always be like, yeah, let's definitely start like this, or was there other things you were kind of mulling over to be like, all right, maybe we start on a conversation, an argument?
Are you talking about the way the movie started?
Yeah,
I've always pictured that. Yeah, I feel like you really need to grab people's attention in the first minute of a film. And so that's why I chose, you know, those scenes in the beginning. But yeah, you know, it's just crazy how this story sort of all unraveled in my mind. And so I didn't have too much time to play around with a lot of different scenarios that could or couldn't have happened. So, but you know, the film's 2 hours, so there's a lot packed in there.
Yeah, but it doesn't feel too long.
Good. Right? Thank you.
Sometimes you'll watch something and you'll be like, I mean, it could have been like half an hour shorter, maybe 20 right. minutes. If we just chop that bit out of the middle, or the end could be tighter. I think it all, it makes sense in what's happening, you know, the time frames and everything. And at the end, yo, God damn, at the, we're getting close to the end. And it's just like, yo, what's going to happen? Where's this going to go? It's like at the block party. When you see a certain person, it's just like, oh, who are they here for? It's like, what's going to happen? And so you just see these different things, and it's just so, you're just gripped. You are so gripped for where this could go.
I'm loving every moment of this, and I'm so happy that you're gripped and that you love the movie. So there's no better reward than actually accomplishing what the movie's intended, you know, to do and be, which is entertaining. So
yeah, no, it's definitely entertaining. But because, you know, this is your first feature, yes, when you're making it after each day, what is that confidence level like? That okay, these that's a great scene. Yes, that will fit in well. That's what we need here. You know, and every day you're compiling all of these components of the film, mm-hmm, but it's putting it all together, right? It's, yeah, it's how many, so many times you hear that the film actually finds its voice in the editing room. Absolutely. So it's just like you're filming every day. You're getting these solid pieces, but then it's just like, will this work as a whole, right? Mm-hmm. So how confident were you as you're going along that what you have is this great film?
Thank you. Yeah, you know, this is my first time going through the entire editing process. So in the beginning, it was before I had even started on day one with my editor, I was, you know, a little intimidated at the process that lied ahead, only because I had never done it before. And so, once my editor sort of put all of the, so what he did was just like, when he spent 2 weeks putting all the scenes together in order, and then I got to see all the scenes in order. So that kind of gave me a little bit of ease knowing that, all right, there's a great movie in there. We just have to piece it together and find that heartbeat. And so it was great working with Lawrence Jordan. He's a seasoned editor who spent so many years. He has, you know, a lot of success as an editor in the industry. So I was very happy to have him on board and learn from him as well, because he already has that, you know, eye for the perfect moment and the pacing and everything. And so I caught on pretty quickly with that. And yeah, I learned a lot, that's for sure.
Okay. Now, was there ever a worry with some of this? Because, you know, it's your first time and you're, mm-hmm, working with these, you know, seasoned people, people that understand, you know, how all of this fits together and works. So that you're wanting to, you know, listen, take people's points of view and suggestions,
yeah,
but you don't want to lose your vision, right? You don't want to cede over all control, and then the finished thing is like, I mean, it's good, but it's not quite what I had in mind, or I kind of wish it had done this. So what was that kind of balancing line like, being like, yeah, no, that's a good suggestion, or I like it, but I kind of want to go in this way. So how did you, yeah, balance that?
Sure. You know, thankfully on Demise, I didn't have anyone hovering over me and trying to kind of tear apart my creative sense of direction in this. And so It was just me and my editor and my composer for a solid 9 months together as we worked on post-production. And so we had so many different cuts of Demise until we finally reached the final cut. But I sort of found my, what do you call it, my flow during the editing process. And so I would spend, you know, a couple a week or two at a time just contemplating different changes that needed to be done in the editing room. And when we got together, I would have like a list full of like hours worth of editing. And so, I was very thankful for all of just how everything went down in all these months. And
okay. Yeah, because it's always, you know, something that you wonder about with these things, like how does that work,
right? And I think every film's different. I mean, I know on other sets, like there's a lot of different creative influences getting in, you know, in the mix of every angle and aspect of things. And I feel like those are also other challenges to overcome. But thankfully on our film, I mean, it was just me literally and the group. So, yeah.
So do you storyboard or what kind of approach did you take to, you know, having your vision kind of put down on paper, as it were?
Yeah. So we didn't have a big budget to do any storyboarding, but, you know, before we shot anything, I spent so much time with my cinematographer, and we shot this very, very quickly in considering, you know, how many pages we had to shoot per day. But, you know, I did look at like different noir films from the past, and I just love old style of different shots. And I sort of got inspiration from that. As far as like the shot list of what I like to see as far as like framing and all that stuff. So, but yeah, we didn't do any storyboarding. We just kind of established the style and look and paired that with, my shot list. And, I'm sure you saw in the movie that we had a few specialty shots, like the super zoom, you know, shots and, things like that. So it was so much fun.
Hey, you went to so many locations.
Yes,
which is just like, you I'm watching being like, yo, they are living, man, they're going all over the place, you know. We're in the hospital, we're in the block party, we're in like this house, that house, this place, that place, you know. It's just like, how was that? Because a lot of times when talking to a first-time director, they're like, oh, we wanted to make sure not many locations, make it easy, right? And then you're like, how many locations can we have? I want more.
I think there was a solid, I want to say like 22 locations. Yeah. And let me tell you, it was like Tetris trying to schedule it all and put it together. Without having these company moves during our shoot, because, you know, you spend too much time if you have to hop locations in one day. But yeah, I, of course, you know, in my imagination, I'm like, no, we need all these houses and we need New York and we need everything. So yeah, I just wanted the world to feel real and a little bit bigger than just, you know, two or three backdrops. So.
Yeah, no, it definitely felt real. It definitely felt we're in a real place and traveling and moving around and doing things like Fashion Week as well. Like,
yeah, I got to keep it exciting, you know?
Yeah, what? Because, you know, you have that whole fashion element, right? Yeah. So with that, are you working with like, the, you know, designers, students, how did you get like those great kind of looks in the film?
Fashion is definitely a character in the movie, and I was just thinking, looking at the budget and seeing all the fashion that I wanted, it wasn't adding up. And so I went down to the, what is it, Los Angeles Film Institution in downtown LA, and I was like, hey, maybe there's some graduates that want to be on board with this film. I'm sure they have collections already, in their studios. And so I physically went down there with my producing partner, like, hey, I know you guys don't know who I am, and I know you probably, know that a lot of people film in LA movies, but let me tell you something. I need one of your students to be on my movie that has a collection. And so thankfully, after harassing them a little bit, I got ahead. I got to the head of, I forget her name, but she referred this incredibly talented fashion designer that was like an alumni there. And she was like, call this guy Rodrigo, he's your guy. And so I was talking with him, and he already had the fashion line already made, the one that you see in the film. So we used his collection as spark fashion line in the movie. And then our head wardrobe, Victoria, she was also great. She had a great collection of a lot of different styles and looks, and she's a fashion girl herself, so she had a lot of fun dressing the twins and Celine and everything, so it all worked out.
I mean, it is a great advertisement to this guy's work, because you see dresses and other things, and you're like, yo, that's, you know what I mean? That's like, whoa.
I know. I feel like this film, there's so many different departments and people that worked on the movie, and it was like their first movie. Like Rodrigo, this was his first feature film that he worked on, and there was a lot of firsts. So everyone's definitely banking on this movie to be a hit and, propel our careers to the sky.
Well,
Fingers crossed.
no, you don't have to cross your fingers.
Never know.
No, not at all. Because you can see the polish. That's the thing, right? Even if, say, noirs and romance and that isn't your thing, you can still look at it and go, that is really well put together. This is crafted really well. It's like with music, and there's, you've got your favorite bands and groups and artists and all of that. And you might hear something, you'd be like, that's not for me. But you'd be like, man, but I love that intro. Or, oh, that bridge part is so good. And the way they blend the beat with that, you can still look at it and go, that's really well done. So I think even if the genre isn't for people, there's no doubt people will look at the mice and go, we need to get these people on our projects, because it's honestly, and it's not, listen, we would, if I didn't like the film, we'd still have a conversation, but it wouldn't be this conversation. So I'm not just saying this because you're in front of me right now. I honestly thought this was a really good film and really well put together, and all the components. There wasn't, when you sometimes you'd be like, man, it was well shot, but the dialogue a little bit all over the place, or the ending. Ah, it's a shame they didn't nail the end. No, just all of it is a great showcase for you.
Thank you so much. That's just like the best compliment ever, because I mean, wow, it's just, thousands of hours and a couple years being spent on this. I think it's around like 3 years now. So it definitely means a lot. And yeah, I definitely made sure that all those small details, were worked out, and yeah, having a great team is definitely the key to success for sure.
No, and you can see that, right? I think it shows that you've all come together and you've done it. You've done it. And that's just incredible. Because I mean, it's easy to talk about something, right? And be like, oh, I like that or I didn't like that. But it's doing it, right? It's doing the thing and having that courage to step up and do the thing. So, man, like, you can only be like, yo, mad props for having the vision and following it through.
Thank you so much. This is an absolute dream to do. And you know, I've dreamt about making my own films my whole life. And so, yeah, I'm definitely grateful and happy that I get to share it with the world. And, you know, hopefully there'll be more to come. So,
Like, what was, can you remember the moment you thought, I want to get into film? Like, was there a certain film you watched as a kid, or, you know, a conversation you had? Like, what was the genesis for this?
Sure. So growing up, I always loved to act, right? And so I started acting at a young age in a local theatrical production. And so all throughout my childhood, I would, you know, do skits with my friends, and we would do these audio recordings pretending like we're on a talk show. So I've always had a passion of like entertaining and just doing it, whether if it was dancing or whatever. And so I've always had a love for the arts. And then as I grew up as a teenager, a couple of my uncles, you know, got those old school camcords to film the family parties. Right, and so once I discovered that around age 10, I was like, oh, hold up, let me see. This is a whole different thing. This is not acting. This is something else. And so I got a hold of those cameras really quick. And my mind opened up to just a whole other world. And so I was always volunteering to film the family parties. And so once I moved to LA, I moved here just for acting. But I soon realized that if I really wanted to make it in this industry, that I was going to have to create the path for myself, because no one else is going to give me that chance or opportunity. And so I definitely worked my ass off and never gave up. And that's the thing, you know, it's just too easy to give up. So I stayed on it and was persistent. And here we are years later.
Yeah, for sure.
But, or I should say decades later.
You know, because there are knockbacks, right? There are, you know, those moments where it looks like it's not going to happen. So how did you stay motivated?
Oh, so challenging. You know, the thing is, like, everybody, you know, I guess, you just really have to dig deep down inside of you and stay true to your purpose in life. And I feel like part of my purpose in life is to do this and to work in this field and to bring stories and entertainment to the world. And it's such a big dream to go after and pursue. And I just kind of ignored the noise after a while when people would ask, is there something else you want to do? You're good at this. Well, why don't you try that? Or, you know, just come home. So just staying true to who you are and sticking through it. And of course, you know, I believe in God, and I would talk to him and pray and just, you know, I can't do anything in this life without God. And so having that strength in my faith definitely helped me get to this point.
Right. Now, with, you know, growing up and acting and doing all of those things and, you know, see then getting the cameras and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What, like, did you ever think that there'd be barriers? Right. Like, because, you know, I think now there's a lot of talk about representation, but growing up, no talk about representation. There was nothing. It was just like, oh, I mean, that film's groundbreaking. They've got a few minorities as background actors. And it's like, oh, be thankful. You know what I mean? That's what it was. And people didn't, you know, I remember having a conversation once with this girl. It's actually a first date that was not great. But she was just like, oh, Friends is my favorite TV show. And I'm like, did you not wonder the fact that New York is a diverse spot, but there was hardly any diversity in Friends? There was odd girlfriend, but that was it. She's like, no. There was more diversity. And she was telling me all of this, and I'm just like, I don't think so. And then during the pandemic, you have the Friends cast going, I think if we did it again, we definitely do more, and we need to do this, and we didn't do that. And I'm just like, yeah, because it wasn't, right? But those were the kind of things that we grew up with. Right. So it's like, you know, because now people often say that you need to see yourself to be able to believe that you could do it. Mm-hmm. But we didn't have that. No. So it's just like, what was the thing that made you go, I can do this? I can, yeah, I want to do this. I want to be in that spot.
Yeah. Well, if we're talking about all the years growing up, definitely having a strong family and a very incredibly amazing father in my life who encouraged me that if I wanted to grow up and be an actress, that I can do it. And so definitely my family gave me the encouragement of, you know, not backing down because of X, Y, Z. You know, this is your only chance in this life. You got to do what you want to do to truly be satisfied and whole with yourself. And so just having that positivity with, you know, all of, I have like tons of aunts and uncles, and they were always, you know, right by my side through everything. And so having that family support has definitely been a huge part in who I am. And so that's 100% for sure.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. I think that's so important, having a support system. Yes. to keep you motivated, to like be your cheerleaders when you need that little boost sometimes, right? Yeah. That assurance that you're not crazy, that you can do that thing.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. But, you know, one thing I did see, like with a lot of the talk around this film, mm-hmm. it is about the fact that the diversity of the film.
Yes.
Right, which is a great thing. And I do love watching a film where we get to see different voices.
Yeah.
Right. I watched Joyride the other day, Adele Lim's film. And man, I laughed so hard. Oh my God. I laughed so hard. It was legitimately funny. And you can, you know, we've seen those films time and time again, like Euro Trip and, you know, mm-hmm. American Pie and just all of these different things. And it gets to a point where it becomes same old, same old.
Right.
Right. But then when you get to see these new voices, new mm-hmm. people come through and do their thing, it's just like, this is great. Oh my gosh, it's so good. So, you know what I mean? Like, I think with this, right, it's a diverse cast, mm-hmm. which I think is great. You know, diverse behind the camera, fantastic. That mm-hmm. doesn't always mean it's going to be a great film.
Right.
Right. Doesn't always mean the story's going to be good. So mm-hmm. I love that. But for me, the big thing was that, you know, a first-time director can come in and hit so hard.
Oh, right? Thank you so much.
But it's just like, it's the perfect advertisement for the removal of barriers.
Yeah, right? I think so.
Because we see, you know, a lot of these same old, you know, voices, right? Mm. When you see a film and, you know, we can take animation for one thing. Like so many films and animated films, they'll have a similar voice cast. And it's just like using this person again and that person again. And you just be like, hey, let's get some new people here. Let's get some fresh blood, you know? So it's just like when you get to see a fresh voice, fresh faces, you get something great. You know what I mean? And it's been demonstrated time and time again. Like Felicia Pryde had Really Love, which is, and it's such a great film. It just it's very reminiscent to Love Jones. I feel it's like this generation's Love Jones, right? So you have things like that, right? There's a film called Blonde Purple from a guy called Marcus Fleming, and oh, it was so good. It kind of reminded me, it's not the same, but it's like Wesley Snipes' Inside Man, you know what I mean? And so people wouldn't know who Felicia Marcus is, right? They wouldn't know who Adele Lim is. But they have delivered these great pieces of work, you know? And now you've come along and you've brought us Demise. And it's just like, it's showing that stop holding people back, right? Stop with all of this nonsense that you're not financing this one because, oh, we don't know if you know, a black audience, we don't know if a Latino audience will come to the cinema and support this, and oh, we don't think these faces can sell a film and get people to, you know what I mean? It's ridiculous.
Yeah, because you hear so much of that, and you know, the thing that I'm really proud of this story of Demise is that, you know, we kind of push in a sense where you're creating something, you don't even think about race or anything. And if someone like me, a Latina, is writing a story, well, naturally, I'm going to write characters that are Latino because that's who I am. It's part of who I am and what I want to see. And so it definitely comes organically and not by force, if that makes sense. It all starts with the script. And so if no one's purchasing films from Latino writers, then you're not going to really get, you know, an organic story that has Latino characters if there aren't many writers out there that are getting their movies produced.
So. Yeah. Yeah, because a lot of times when you see something and it's got, you know, they've tried to make it diverse,
like, you can see the try on screen.
it can really come off as forced.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Or like people talking in a certain way, acting in a, you know, it oftentimes reminds me of like Dawson's Creek, where everyone talked in the same way. And I'm just like, when you've got a friend group, not everyone talks exactly in the same kind of sentence structure, right? You can have different people here, but everyone will be exactly the same. And it's just like, that's kind of weird. You know, that doesn't kind of work that well.
Totally.
So, it's just, it's a good thing to see. Like, but what was that like? Was there pushback? Was there difficulty selling the film, you know, getting financing for the film?
Yeah. And so one of the things that I would tell people before we even shot anything was like, you know, I'm Latina and I was born and raised in California, and my walk of life is different than maybe a Latino who doesn't live in the United States. And so I would tell people, yeah, this movie is Latino forward, as they call it these days, but it's mainstream. This is just an erotic love triangle thriller. And it's story driven, opposed to, you know, picking and pulling and trying to like create a puzzle out of various pieces of things in today's society that you feel are going to make you, you know, reach the top. It's sort of like this is sort of like a reflection on just how I see Latino culture. I mean, we're we're Americans. Mm. We are fashion designers sometimes. We are, you know, this. We're not always, you know, the positions that are portrayed in many films, you know, the gardener, the maid. It's like the same roles. And these are the kinds of roles that I would audition for when I was acting. And so I was just like, where are the lead parts? And I don't think there are any lead parts for someone like me. So, and if there were, you know, they were only going to like the top two actresses at the time. And so I found all this out very quickly.
I know it's kind of crazy. I forget who I was talking to recently, but it's like in films, I think the only people with albinism that I've seen of like bad guys, mm-hmm. right? You're a henchman, you're an evil, you're a genius, a kind of thing. Like there's no you know, superhero. There's no no one.
I mean, we just barely made one, the movie Blue Beetle. I'm like, well, finally, there we go. Let's start doing something here. Yeah, and the funny thing is, like, all these stereotypes are always out there. But in all honesty, like, I don't know any drug dealers. Like, I don't know these people, like, that are always on screen. And so it's very interesting. And so that's why in Demise, you know, everyone's sort of, like, you know, very high-end sometimes and just came out naturally, so.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. I think it's important to see different people, right? And people doing different professions, right? Yeah. I was having a great conversation with a filmmaker, Daniel Glenn Barber, recently, about film and the fact that, you know, we're talking about some projects and he's just like, but people are probably just going to think it's a hood film, right? And I'm just like, yeah, but I think it's the way you frame things, right? Because it's mm-hmm. just like, no one looked at Moonlight and was just like, oh, that's a hood film. That's a shooting right. film. And I think it's sometimes it's the way you frame it. It's the people that are behind it. But it's mm-hmm. just like, we have so many different stories. Mm-hmm. We don't have to pigeonhole them, right? You don't have to go, oh, it has to be this, right? You mm-hmm. it has to be that. I remember going to a talk with John Singleton, and he was just like, he'd after Menace, like going to studios, and they're like, we want another gang film. That's the only thing we're gonna finance, right? And it's so crazy sometimes, but it's just like, you know, being able to tell this story, mm-hmm. that's the great thing, you know, because when you reference some of the films that you watched as a kid, right, mm-hmm. they're predominantly white. I mean, not even predominantly, they were just all white casts and all of this, which that's fine, right? But it's mm-hmm. just, let's throw some different things in there, you know? Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Right.
So that's where it gets interesting. Because, you know, I remember watching Shortcomings at mm-hmm. the last year's London Film Festival. And, you know, it's a kind of an indie romance film. But we're seeing, you know, this Asian cast mm-hmm. having these conversations and different things that were different from that same film with a white cast, right? Because it's different experiences.
Right.
So mm-hmm. you're touching on these different elements and things, and you're like, oh, that's really, I hadn't thought of that, or, oh, that's mm-hmm. interesting, right? So I think that's the beauty of diverse storytelling.
I 100% agree, absolutely.
Yeah. No, it's just, sorry. I think I just talked to you for a little while.
Totally fine. You're good.
Oh, man. But The Mize is just about to drop. You had your premiere the other day. What was that like?
Wow, it was amazing. It was just a surreal moment and definitely an outer body experience, sitting in the theater watching the live reactions of gasps and sighs and laughs and hollers and the whole nine. So yeah, it was an incredible thing to see this film on the big screen and have everyone there and all the cast there, and we had a great time.
Oh, outstanding. Like, did people react to the moment you were hoping they were going to react to, and in the way you were hoping they were going to?
And then some, yeah. I mean, I was so taken aback by how emotionally people were just so invested in the story and characters, to the point where, you know, they didn't care if they were just yelling things out at the screen. It was just like, it was in them and they needed to get it out. And like, I was like, yeah, like, if you think that's funny, go ahead and laugh. Like, I want to hear it all. And so I was just sitting there next to my DP, Justin, and we're just kind of getting a kick out of all of these reactions. And, you know, there's a few funny moments in there as well. And so I was really happy to hear the laughs that came about for the funny lines that character Miguel has in the film. And so yeah, it was great. Man. It was great.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Yo, how was that cake, by the way? Like, did you all eat that cake?
I think they did. Yeah, I think they did, because it was like a freshly bought cake, and then Cheryl, our caterer, was like writing the boy's mind on there, and very, very funny. Yeah.
Oh man! Oh, that's fantastic. Was that the first time you'd all seen it on a big screen?
No, we actually had a cast and crew screening last summer, where we invited the entire crew and the entire cast everybody that played every role, like all of them were there. And we're just at that point, before we had found distribution, we wanted to see what everyone thought of the movie that we worked so hard on. And so they all came to that. And then our premiere was more like press and marketing based, to kind of create the buzz for the film. And yeah, so everybody saw what we did, and you know, we're very happy that they loved it. So
awesome. I think, you know, the big question after everyone has watched this, I mean, there are a few questions, but because in the press kit it says you've been writing, right?
Yeah,
Yeah. So, when are we gonna see the sequel?
I know. So the thing is, I was like, for the sequel, I want to level everything up, you know, level up the fashion, level up the sex, level up the settings, like, let's go to Paris. Like, I have an outline already of a story. I haven't written it yet. But the only way that this sequel will be made is if a studio were to finance the film, because the ideas that I have in my mind, they're not for the indie realm. So. Yeah, but hopefully after I finish up this Christmas romance screenplay that I'm working on, after that's done, then I'll start on the sequel of Demise. But I don't know how many years it's going to be until we get to do this, but we'll see.
That's not the answer I'm looking for, right? I'm looking for, we're going to do it soon. I wish I could say,
yes, somebody already asked me and they want to finance this project for $10 million.
After, you know, watching it, I did, you know, when I was doing my review, I said, right, that, listen, people are going to watch this and they will be throwing money at you to do this sequel, because it's so good, right? It's so good. So everyone's going to want to see this sequel. I feel financing will not be as hard as it might have been to get this one off the ground, because God damn, and we're left in this place where it's just like, but what's gonna come next? where are we going? Like, she's here, he's here, like, what's happening? So I think people definitely will be wanting part two.
I hope so.
And Paris is very close to the UK. Just remember that.
Okay? Is that where you're based?
Yeah, I'm in London.
Okay, well, you're going to have to help us on the sequel, so.
I'm just a phone call away.
I'm going to remember this, Kevin.
Oh, man. Okay, so we've got to wait a little bit for the sequel.
Yes. But
what does the future look like? You say you've got a Christmas piece.
Mm-hmm.
So where are we with that one?
Yeah, so I guess my goal is to direct other people's projects, as well as get my other scripts produced, like the Christmas romance, and then the feature of Epic Love, since we only shot the trailer. But I guess the next step for me is to find an agent and a manager to, you know, hopefully get some more gigs. And, you know, the thing with directing, the more you do it, the better you get. And I just hope to keep learning and getting better at this whole thing. So,
well, I mean, you have definitely set your benchmark real high with this one. I get to see people just clamoring to work with you, right? I think the thing that you probably, the biggest thing you have to just think about is genres, right? Like, what genres do you want to play in? You know,
yeah.
You the kind of romance type of thing, or have you got a Western in mind, a sci-fi, a fantasy? Like, what can you see in that?
Yeah, regard? I think so far, I guess where I am now, I gravitate towards either the, you know, dark love stories or rom-coms. So anything that has to do with relationship love, I'm just there. But you never know what the future has in store and you know, different genres that I might do. So, yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm definitely intrigued. And it's good, as I say, it's good to see, you know, a different type of, romance film. And you know, one thing which I loved about this is the conversations with the friends, right? Because in a lot of films, you have people acting a certain way and no one comments, right? I've had friends like say certain things to me and I'm like, yo, what about your fucking girlfriend, man? Like, what about you? How are you doing that? But you don't often see that. So when Fiona's talking to Miguel and he's just like, yeah, what did you think was going to happen? I was just like, yes. Oh, good. We're having a proper conversation here.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, those scenes mean a lot to me because a lot of the times, like, I guess in the technical aspects of screenwriting, you know, they people in the industry love to say, well, every scene needs to have a purpose and every scene needs to push the story through. I don't believe that. I feel that when you are storytelling, when you're doing a cinematic storytelling, you have to make it real and relatable to the viewer. And naturally, when all of us go through something, we're calling that cousin, we're calling our friend, we're calling that person. And so even though those moments throughout the film doesn't necessarily push the story forward, it helps it feel so much, you know, more rounded than not having them, you know?
Yeah, no, it's everyone gets fleshed out. You know, I think we are dealing with three-dimensional characters here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that was, yeah, that worked really well. And even the flashback scenes, man, they were, you know, in the right places. You know, it didn't hinder the film. It just, you're like, that's how that happened. That's how they got to there. Oh, okay. So, all of that. All of these components work so well. So
yeah, and I will tell you that you'll never believe this, but I didn't let any outside professionals read Demise before we shot it because I was just so afraid that someone would just pick and pull and make me doubt what's in there, and I didn't want that to happen, and so. Yeah, I didn't get any feedback from anybody, and hardly anybody read the script besides the actors that shot it and my producers. So it was a very, secretive thing that we had going on. Like, we can't really ask for anyone's opinion on this movie. It's go time. I have no time to like wonder if this is good or not. I feel it's good. I'm going with that. So.
Well, it worked. It worked. It didn't lead to the film's demise. No, I think there's something to that, right? Because it's trusting in you. It's banking on you, right? You put mm-hmm. all of those chips in your corner and we're like, yo, I'm betting on myself here. And there's something magical about that, right? And it worked. It paid off. So congratulations.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that. I'm very proud of this and the whole team. And
so you should be. So you should be. So how can people keep track of everything you're doing and, support the film?
Yeah, well, if anyone's on social media, like half the world is, so I'm sure you guys are, you can find our film page on Instagram, Demise the Film, and then you can find me on Instagram, YaraEstrada_low, that's YARA. And then besides that, the film's coming out on February 27th. You can find it on Amazon Prime, Apple TV, Vudu, as well as on demand, Comcast, AT&T, Spectrum, DirecTV, and the film's being distributed by Gravitas Ventures.
Boom, you heard it here, people. So all the links will be on the website, so make sure you go, you follow Yara, you go check out the film, mark the 27th on the calendar, because you do not want to miss it. It is tremendous. It is really tremendous, and you will be gripped all the way through. So get some demise in your life, people. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it. The opportunity to watch your film. I really loved it. And I'm really looking forward to seeing what you do next and having a follow-up conversation.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Kevin. This was lovely. It was lovely talking with you. And yes, I will keep you updated.
Outstanding. All right. You take care, okay?
You as well.
All right.
Bye. Bye.
Yo, people. So there we go. There we go. Right. Yara was so great. That was a fantastic conversation, a lot of insight. Man, I hope you enjoyed it. Definitely, definitely mark the 27th in the calendar and go check out Demise. Because as I said, it's not just a diverse film. It's just a great story that's been put together so well, every single element. So yeah, enjoy it, check it out. share the conversation with your friends, subscribe to your YouTube, all of that jazz. But also remember, there was part one, right? Part one, we checked out five films, you know, Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning. We've got History of Evil, Joyride, Spinsters, and something else, which I can't remember. But go check it out. Share with your friends. And we will see you next week. So enjoy your film watching, people. Peace.